Welcome to In 20XX. This series takes the listener, year by year, into the future. If you like emerging tech, eco-tech, futurism, apocalyptic survival scenarios, and disruptive science, sit back and enjoy short stories that showcase my research into how the future may play out.
When individuals fail, it's the group that survives. When the group fails, it's individuals who survive.
Cindy cradles her baby in her arms and watches as two men carry an unresponsive femme. Water falls in bucket loads down the open stairwell and loudly splashes off steps and railings. An older femme directs the men. "In here, follow me." She holds to a rail as her feet slip. Cindy sits on her suitcase in the corridor. Besides the water that splashes in from the stairwell, the corridor is dry. The choppy layers of her East Coast-styled haircut remain disheveled. On her baby doll face, her lips frown, and her eyebrows lower and come together. The corridor fills up with people. Most wear what they had on for the powwow, but their vibrant attire has been soaked, muddied, and battered by gales. A boy lays out a blanket on the floor where the men lay the wounded femme down. The boy says, "I've got this first aid thing. I don't know if it'll work. My link isn't working." A guy wearing surfer shorts and a jacket featuring an elk on the back says, "I know how to do it." He holds the first aid bot over the femme's chest and presses down a large blue button. The button lights up and pencil-width robot arms extend. They pull the device to the femme. An arm holding a mask folds out and covers her face. Manipulators in the mask open her mouth and check for clearance. A physical speaker announces, "Stand clear." Diagnosing. Blood pools around the femme's head. Her hair is already soaked with blood. Her body lurches. The bot forces air into her lungs. Unseen between the bot and the patient, a needle injects her with anti-shock drugs. The bot says, "Stay clear. I'm calling 911. She's losing blood." One of the arms moves from her shoulder to her head. Shears fold out and cut her hair, exposing a deep gash on her head. The shears fold away. A little nozzle folds out and sprays the wound with foam. The femme moves with a steady rhythm as the machine breathes for her. Cindy tries to push the memory out of her head. Before her link disconnected, her high school best friend posted a video. Callista sits in a cramped bathroom in the sponge bath basin, crying to the camera. "My window's exploded! Help! I don't know what's happening!" Spots of red on her face grow larger as small cuts bleed. Her hair whips around like the tail of a bucking rodeo horse. The walls vibrate. Light bleaches the video as the walls break apart and fly away. Moving independent of gravity, her body lifted and straightens, her clothes flapping rapidly. Hundreds of blurred objects fly past behind her. She grows smaller and flips, feet overhead, then the video starts again. Cindy sits on her jacket cradling her baby Taylor. The hot air smells musty. 20 others sit or lie on the floor, and one man walks up and down the hall talking to himself and shaking his head. Lights from above create shadows on faces. Scared children huddle close to their parents. Sometimes faraway crashes and screeching draw their attention. Everyone moves slowly and looks around with wide eyes. Surfer shorts guy, whose name is Winston, sits near Cindy and taps at an old foldable. She asks, "Get anything?" He shakes his head and says, "No, no Wi-Fi, no 911. I wish I had a radio." She watches Taylor and brushes his cheek with her thumb. Winston shudders as he exhales, and there's such despair in his movements. He says, "My girlfriend, she chose to go. She needed to find her kids. She begged me to come with her, but her kids live in Oklahoma, and I don't remember her talking to them in the last 2 years." Inner conflict makes him flinch. Cindy looks toward Winston but doesn't make eye contact. She says, "You were right to stay." She wants to say that he'd be dead if he went with his girlfriend and that it was crazy for his girlfriend to head to Oklahoma. She offers him a squinted eye half smile, sad but encouraging. His big hands make the tablet seem small. He wears a silver necklace and his regalia is folded next to him. Before they met, they both attended the powwow. She was going to take a plane back to the East Coast on the morning the storm hit. She shifts Taylor in her arms so that his head is higher. At the same time that an AR pop-up appears, Winston says, "What's this?" And he drops his foldable. The pop-up says, "A public link is available. Tap to connect to TribalNet." Winston air taps. Cindy says, "Is it safe to tap on it?" He says, "Probably." Still sitting, he hops. "I'm online. Assistant, call Gretchen. Assistant." Cindy taps the pop-up. A menu appears, and pop-ups appear like a column of cards in a game of solitaire. She says, "Assistant, contact Pulse." Winston madly taps and swipes. Other people excitedly talk, tap, and swipe. Cindy's messages are from friends and family. She swipes those to the side and searches the menu for Pulse. A pop-up appears that blocks the menu. "Welcome to TribalNet. Rest assured, teams are hard at work to reach you and help you with your needs." Winston says, Gretchen, please pick up." Blinded by tears, he lets his head drop. "Gretchen, if you get this, call." He chokes on his words. At the other end of the corridor, a femme gets up just to fall over and start sobbing. Her dog jumps around her, yapping with confusion. Cindy needs to contact Pulse, but the TribalNet pop-up blocks her. It wants her to sign in. She hurries through the sign-in process. Yes, it's okay to access her ID info. Yes, it's okay to track her position. Yes, it's okay to access her implanted health sensors. Winston stares at the floor, taking slow breaths. Cindy notices him and reaches for his hand. She says, "You made the best choice. Everyone here will agree with me. You made the best choice." He says, "I could have made her stay." She says, "No, people do crazy things." He says, "We didn't know the storm would be so bad." She pats his hand as he covers his face and shakes with sobs. She says, "We need you here." Cindy leans against the wall, looking down at Taylor. Winston lies near two suitcases, an arm covering his eyes. He may be asleep. A pop-up appears of Misty Josiah speaking on video. Young, looking for 38, years of business dealings have given Misty a corporate air. Her blouse would fit in a board meeting. Her business-only makeup may lead some to believe she's conservative when nothing could be further from the truth. She says, "Hello, survivors. I want to reassure you that we're on our way to get you to a safe place. If you're watching this video, you're sheltering in an isolated location. You may feel cut off, but now that we've located you, we're on our way. And we have all the water, food, and medical tools that you need. I've sent you a request to install the Medusa browser. Please tap on the pop-up to install it on your link. We have a fully functional internet on the reservation, and it's built for the Medusa browser. You can always uninstall it later when your service provider has come back online. Medusa has a well-established record of safety. Michelle Obama, Lex Fridman, and Kizmi Ars are known users. You can continue to use a guest instance of TribalNet, but installing Medusa will enable you to attend virtual meetings, utilize our AI helpers, and will enable you to operate all your devices again. Other than that, keep hopeful. Help others. We'll be there soon." Cindy quickly clicks through the installation. An image of a green femme with snakes instead of hair appears, moves towards Cindy, and fades away. When the new home space appears, she shouts, "Assistant!" A strange voice says, "Hello, I'm your new assistant. Let's get to know each other." A quiet, distant thudding sound has been growing louder. It comes from down the corridor, away from the group of survivors. A little girl squeals with joy as her robot doll begins to move. "Molly's working!" Her mother smiles and holds her daughter as her daughter holds the toy. Cindy's suitcase raises as its wheels extend, and it inches toward her. The voice says, "Would you like me to call you Cindy?" Cindy says, "I need to reach Pulse." The new assistant says, "Pulse isn't in your contacts. Please give me more information so I know how to reach out to them." Cindy slumps with frustration. They're a company, Pulse Interpersonal or something like that. A song begins to play from someone's speakers until they say, "Stop." The song stops. The pounding has gotten very loud. Cindy can feel it through the floor. Except for the femme being kept alive by the first aid device, everyone's getting up and running toward it. Holding Taylor, Cindy does the same. As she joins those standing around a section of wall, mortar between bricks shows as paint cracks in rhythm to the pounding. Particles eject through the cracks and dirty the wall. One brick jumps forward and then another. Cindy covers Taylor's face. Bricks fall and hit the floor with thuds. Dust-covered robot arms swing hammers on the other side. Two humanoid bots break through. An avatar of an elder appears and holds his hand out to Cindy. He says, "Hello, Cindy, how are you?" She says, "Fine." He says, "We have water and food. Please step back." She says, "Are you real or AI?" The elder blinks at her. He says, "I'm real. My name is Martel." She says, "What's my middle name?" He laughs a little and says, I don't know. You only have Cindy on your name tag. One bot moves bricks aside as the other hands Cindy a water bottle. Through her link, it says, Do you need a medical check? She shakes her head. People are cheering, laughing, and clasping their hands together. A robot leads the group through a utility tunnel. Cables and pipes running down the length of the tube cramp the tight space. Cindy walks behind the femme kept alive by the first aid bot. The femme lies on a stretcher bot with small feet that stomp in puddles on the floor as it walks. Winston walks behind Cindy. A man says, Is this what I have to do to get a club discount? Lights turn on as the group passes and shut back off after they pass. People bend down and twist to fit through tight spaces. An older femme says, Powwows bring the tribes together, but this last powwow set a new record. It was the biggest powwow I've ever been to. A younger femme says, I wasn't going to come, but with free hotel stay and food, I felt I had to come. Older femme says, Did you know the tribe owns all the resorts and parks? Younger femme says, Wow, that's a lot. Older femme says, Did you notice how a lot of it is underground? Younger femme says, I guess, but that's the way it is where I'm from. I'm from Canada, and a lot of the highways and public trams go under the cities. Older femme says, This isn't exactly the best time of year to hold a powwow. Younger femme says, I guess. They pass through a small engineer's shop, a reinforced door, and down some steps to the weave road floor of a subway line with three tracks. A strong gust of wind, like a blast from a furnace, howls down the tunnel, causing people to waver as they walk. The second robot trails behind them. A loose sign clangs against the wall. A clean, shiny train silently rolls up and doors open. Over everyone's links, the elder's voice says, I see you made it to the subway. Be careful as you board. Cindy holds Taylor tight as she climbs the rungs that would normally be hidden by a loading platform. Winston holds her elbows to steady her. He hoists her suitcase up. The suitcase can take stairs but can't climb a rung ladder. In the hard light inside the car, everyone looks dirty, wet, bruised, scraped, and haggard. They all take seats, and with relief, they breathe the cool air. As the train moves down the line, the elder says, This subway connects all the public venues all around the reservation. We close two of the three lines, and living units are being set up in the tunnel to house the nearly 9,000 sheltering from the storm. We should be able to stop the wind in the tunnel in a day or two. Wind shoves the sides of the cars. Some people unwrap emergency food bars and eat. A teen girl uses a hand mirror to inspect a scratch on the side of her face. They roll into a lighted section where people and robots unload crates on the platform. Families sit in a group singing to cheer the kids up. Lines form in front of a table and people walk away with full grocery bags. Others hold fresh towels and follow an arrow on a sign that says, Bathrooms. On the unused tracks, robots fit together the walls of tiny homes and fasten them with power tools. A femme wearing a yellow rain jacket greets Cindy's group as they deboard. She says, Welcome. We were so excited when you showed up on our tracking map. She holds up blue cards. We have accommodations for singles, families of four, and families of more than four. Form a line and let me know which you need. The tunnel wind isn't as strong here. Each single or group takes a card. When they look at the card, directions to their tiny homes appear. Cindy and Winston end up getting homes right next to each other. He nods to her before she goes into hers. She says, Get some rest. He nods again. Holding Taylor and followed by her luggage, she steps in and shuts the door. The air grows still and begins to cool. A panel on the wall folds down to make a cot/bench. She sits on it and stares at an empty wall. Kids' hollers penetrate the walls. Taylor looks so sweet, she says, Assistant, show me the website for Pulse International. A website appears, but the two call links on it don't work. She tried visiting the sites she goes to the most. She can watch all her favorite videos and listen to the music mixes she likes. It's strange and surprisingly pleasant not to see the advertising she used to see all the time. She says, Assistant, play Taylor's favorite song. The strange voice says, You want to hear a song? Who's Taylor? She attends a meeting in a virtual reality, brightly lit assembly hall. Hundreds sit in the audience and seven people sit on stage. Most in the audience are new user avatars, cartoonified versions of the Humes attending through them. Misty Josiah, who Cindy recognizes, everyone knows Misty Josiah, steps up to the podium. Misty wears a shimmering blouse with intricate tribal patterns woven into it. With short hair, her cheekbones stand out, and her age lines give character to her expressions. Her avatar must come from a recent scan of the real Misty. It looks the age of Misty's latest talks. She says, "I'm glad you could attend our meeting. This is a hard time for us all. Know that you can find what you need here. Reach out. Groups in your neighborhood will help you grieve and face the bewildering questions we're all grappling with. We have a lot to cover, so I'll go down the list. The storm outside hasn't died down. We're safe here, but any travel outside of the subway tube and network of underground rooms isn't at all safe. There's much talk about going above ground. We have live weather reading instruments, and I can promise you, the storm isn't letting up at all. Do not try to go outside. The world internet is out of service as far as we know. Most of the world internet is hosted on satellites. We're cut off from space, and that's the reason you can't reach most of your favorite online services. But we have a great internet on the reservation. For decades, we've invested in used computers. When the Supreme Court paused educational institutes, many schools moved their online presence here where federal law doesn't apply. We've kept a backup of the World Wide Web. Our internet can't provide everything the WorldNet did, but it can come pretty close. We refashioned Jobs Navigator to an AI called Community Navigator. This helper will guide you to support other survivors in this time of emergency. You'll be rewarded tokens for your efforts to help the community. With the tokens, you can buy non-essential items, better living accommodations, rigs, robots, dinner at a restaurant, and so much more. As Cindy listens, she feels confused. Why would she want to save up tokens when she plans to go home as soon as the storm ends? Misty continues, U.S. currency can't buy you things wherever token products and services are sold. If you're wealthy with U.S. dollars, I implore you to forget about it for now and don't try to use dollars to buy tokens. We don't need U.S. dollars. We need everyone to pitch in as much as possible. Cindy shifts in her seat. She is wealthy with U.S. dollars, as Misty calls it. She owns two houses, many off-road vehicles, and robots. Well, those may have been destroyed, but she has enough in her bank accounts to buy it all back again. She's heard that Misty can sound weird, but to talk about money as if it's a relic bothers Cindy. Misty says, "We need your help. We implore you to help out as much as possible. There's lots to do. I want to assure you, you're safe here. We did lose all our solar and wind power, but we have geothermal power plants providing enough energy for our current needs. The U.S. has been unfailingly negligent at recognizing our needs for clean water and adequate sewer treatment. For half a century, lack of water has been our biggest problem. We have our own water purification and sewer treatment plants. Fortunately, these plants are subterranean and undamaged by the storm. The reservation had aeroponic grow towers and fish farm tanks. Most of those are lost, but we have food stores and are rapidly building underground hemp farms that can feed the production of yeast-derived foods. We're also constructing new grow rooms. I know how badly you want to get back to your life before the storm, but this situation isn't going to end anytime soon. Talk with your assistant. They can help you with all your concerns. And please think of the survivors in arm's reach. They need you as much as you need them. We're on a ship in stormy seas, and our survival depends on coming together. Thank you." Misty bows in three directions and takes her seat. Even though Cindy feels skeptical, she claps vigorously. Her face glows, and she finds herself crying. Tamika and her husband Corey recline on one of many, many decks on a cruise ship. She says, "My grandfather worked at the same company for like 60 years. She wears multicolor glasses shaded dark and a low-cut tank top. Corey says, "At the post office?" He gives her his endearingly goofy smile. With a quiet voice, she says, "Yeah, I'm 30. 30 years old and forced to retire." He says, "We're rich," she says. "It was like climbing a mountain as fast as I could. The lower elevations disappeared the higher I went." He says, "And I was given job complete 3 years before you. The ground disappeared under my feet long before it did for you." She says, "My parents were always, acting like their jobs would always be there, even though they both changed jobs all the time." He rolls over and holds out a virgin mixed drink as if to make a toast. "We were the last. The only one who kept a job longer than you is the President of the United States." She busts out laughing. "He'll be replaced soon. Jenny AI for president," he says. "I trust her more." Tamika says, "Even though, hold on, I'm getting a call." She sits up. An avatar stands by her lounge chair. He wears a suit with a burgundy double fat tie. Standing upright like a butler, he says, "Miss Rosa, thank you for accepting my call. I have a job request for you." She says, "Are you Hume or AI?" He says, "AI." She relaxes and says, "Tell me about it." Her husband sits up, wraps a towel over his hairy shoulders, stands, and walks to a pool. The AI says, "Horizon's neighborhood complex is having an issue. It features tube direct delivery from Giantess, and packages have gone missing." She says, "Is that it?" He says, "Yes." She says, "You want me to fix one problem?" He says, "The most advanced troubleshooting AI hasn't been able to find what's causing it. It may take time for you to uncover what's happening. The pay is good." Though she sneers at him, she says, "Ooh, where is it?" He says, "Gary, Indiana." She half frowns, half smiles. Her grandparents live in Gary. The largest single-building neighborhood complex in the United States is in Gary, Indiana. Horizon's neighborhood complex stands 48 stories high and has a footprint equal to 10 city blocks times 10 city blocks squared. It contains its own Giantess distribution center, air taxi station, and Total Care Hospital. The rest of the city feels small in its presence. In a popular song, a man sings, "In the shadow of Horizons, I make my way." Most of the residents of Horizons NC work data farming 2.0 jobs. Data farmers earn when they allow themselves to be observed, copied, sampled, and experimented on. But 2.0 data farmers let data collectors take it to the extreme. You can make a lot by wearing live cams and mics all the time. There's something I must tell you. I'm wearing Ace Amira cams. I can't get to the footage and I'm told Humes don't watch it. Only AI see it. I hope this won't discourage you from dating me. No, I can't just take them off. I'll lose my job. Prostitutes can make extra by data farming sex acts. A youth can earn what feels like a fortune by dancing at raves while wearing recording devices. Paid participants get special data collecting and streaming implants. The implants go in veins, stomachs, eyes, brains, any region of the body. Pharma farmers become living labs for new treatments. Researchers can live adjust medical experiments within the volunteers. MRI farmers wear MRI caps all the time, and computers correlate their words, actions, and reactions to their brain scans. One company that pays people to wear these caps is developing a theory of mind AI that'll be able to read people's expressions and behavior much better than empathetic people can. Suit farmers wear full-body sensor suits all the time that record pressure applied to the outside of their bodies. At the same time, their surroundings are 3D mapped and matched with the pressure recordings. This data collection will improve future VR experiences and help robots act according to what they feel. Social farmers work in groups holding mock work environments, sporting events, and parties. Sorry, introverts, data farmers make more money the more social they are. There are people who throw parties just to make money. A lot of the attendees wear the suits, have a good old time, and are being data farmed the whole time. Social farmers are also called the actors. One group of 20 holds a dinner party 5 times a week. Most of them assume different roles and play their parts to the best of their abilities. Is this a dream job for those who love to act? They earn enough to have lots of extra money to spend on frivolous things. Companies search for and hire likable people, people who can become popular. Their behaviors, moods, affects, expressions, and reactions feed databases of great characteristics. In Horizons NC, they have a stage town set within a giant room where people go to pretend to live each day. With most residents of Horizons working as data farmers, a culture all its own arises. No one is sure why, but game addiction is common among data farmers. Horizons has its own malls, restaurants, and stores available to residents only, but these venues remain vacant most of the time. Other NCs, large and small, have crowded public spaces. Residents of Horizons NC predominantly like to disappear into VR games when they aren't working. Tamika arrives early in the morning in a copter that touches down inside a landing bay. The cab lowers, and as she steps off, a retractable roof closes above, drawing a shadow over her. A remote meeting robot walks up to her. It doesn't have a head, but her AR creates a hologram head on it of the operator, in this case, a man she video conferenced with earlier, a Mr. Brandon Upsey. The bot is dressed in a generic unisex business suit. The hands look like Hume hands wearing gloves made of faux leather material. Something she's only confided to Corey is that she feels more relaxed working with people operating remote meeting bots than working with them in person. Brandon reaches out as he nears her. They shake hands. His hand feels like it's carved out of wood. A note appears in her upper right. He says, "I just sent your room info. Is your luggage automated?" She nods, taps on the note, and says, "Assistant, have my luggage go to this room." A message that says, "Right away," appears, then disappears. Brandon clasps his hands and stands with a slight bow. He says, "We had 4 more packages go missing this morning. Did you find anything out from your remote inspection?" She says, "No, say, didn't you plan the med kiosks in Las Vegas?" He perks up and says, "That was me. Did you work on that?" She says, "I came in for the 1-year checkup." He says, "How'd we do?" She says, "After the updates, everything ran smoothly. I did run into some angry doctors out there." He says, "Yeah, I got a lot of flack from them too. I guess you and I are in the same boat now." She says, "Yeah, except for jobs like this." He says, "Well, look, I know you just arrived. Do you want to start tomorrow, or is this evening too soon?" She says, "How about tomorrow?" He nods and says, "I'm surprised you came in person. I bet that cruise ship you were on has decent rigs." She says, "I feel like I solve problems faster in person. I may just be old-fashioned." When she takes a shower in a small furnished apartment, the water smells like chlorine, and a sign on the tile says, "Don't drink the shower water." She puts on a violet Indian kurti and follows AR arrows down the hall. Transporter doors slide open and she steps inside. A transporter looks like an elevator, but it can travel horizontally as well as up and down. She checks her makeup in the all-mirror walls as the car causes her to sway, then gives her a feeling of getting lighter for a few seconds. It's been a while since she's gotten dressed up and gone to a public place on her own. It reminds her of that exciting age when she had money to spare for the first time and didn't know how to spend it. That's when she carried a few extra pounds, back when lots of people were fat. Now only her breasts and butt are ample. Her midsection is as thin as can be. The doors open to chilly air and light reflecting off polished floors. Stepping out into the wide open space of the mall, she feels disoriented. She can look up at many balcony walkways, hanging vines as long as Rapunzel's hair, and elaborate doorways to stores, but the place looks empty. Not a soul in sight, no one taking the escalators, no families sitting on bench planters. Meanwhile, robots come and go. Cleaning robots suck up dust from nooks and corners. 2 humanoid bots carry a flat of glassware. A humanoid bot stands outside a nail salon, waving to no one. Because she'd asked assistant to show her to a pizzeria, arrows lead across the open space. She follows them. As lit signs dance with animations, the absence of people scares her. Has there been a bomb scare? Was a chemical weapon released here? She says, "Assistant, is it safe for me to be here?" Assistant says, "Your location is safe. You're welcome and encouraged to visit any and all of the mall destinations." When she walks into the pizzeria, a song from her favorite artist plays. Of the 5 Humebots dispersed throughout the dining hall, 1 switches on and walks toward her. Over her link, a cheerful femme's voice says, "Sit wherever you like." No kids laughing, no glasses clinking, no murmur of group meetings. You don't realize that Hume establishments have their own kind of barn smell until you walk into a restaurant rarely visited where that smell is missing. She sits at a table with a good view of the animatronic band on a stage, even though they remain motionless. Menu items appear in front of her. Choices she's likely to make appear larger and in the center. She taps on the curry pizza and cherry chocolate iced coffee, her go-to comfort lunch. The items disappear. She says, "Call Corey." Her husband shows in a video call window that pops up. He looks at her with wide eyes. She says, "What's wrong?" He says, "The ship docked in Puerto Rico. They say all ships must dock. They're expecting a storm." She says, "Where are you?" He says, "They made us go to a very overcrowded shelter. All hotels are booked. I already tried offering to pay triple, even 10 times the cost to get a room." He glances around and winces. Harried and disheveled strangers crowd behind him. She was looking forward to telling him about her spooky experience in the vacant mall, but it doesn't seem like a good time. Instead, she says, "Oh, I can't believe that. That sounds awful." He says, "Yeah, I'm getting scared." She says, "Can't Jobs Navigator connect you with a local who has a room they can offer you?" He says, "I've tried everything. Some ships couldn't dock and people are ferried over in smaller boats. I think they're turning people away from the shelter at this point." Her mouth drops open. She says, "Oh, honey, I'm scared." In the pizzeria, a gaunt femme with bedhead hair and wearing pajamas walks in, watches Tamika like she's seeing a space alien, takes a pizza box from one of the humanoid serves, and walks out. Tamika smells pizza and hears ice clinking in a glass. The bot sets her lunch down. The femme's voice says, "I've got your lunch here. Enjoy." After hours of crawling through utility tunnels, Tamika climbs through a hatch into a machine service room and waits for Brandon to come online. She pulls handfuls of used tissue from her coverall pockets and stuffs them into her tool bag. Her eyes feel sore, and she pushes the fear for her husband out of her thoughts. This room feels sealed off like a submarine. Floor one is four floors above her. The benches, tools, and troubleshooting equipment gather dust. They were put here as a legacy afterthought and probably have never been used. The remote meeting bot jerks, and Brandon's head appears above the bot's shoulders. He makes eye contact and says, "Find something?" She holds up what looks like a rubber hose with a metal disc taped to one end and some wires hanging out the other end. "What do you suppose this is?" He leans to have a closer look. "That was in the giantess tubes?" She nods. "Tucked behind some sound insulation." He says, "Holy." Suddenly his head disappears and the bot falls forward. The bot throws its arms back to correct its balance. Then it stands upright in its offline position. Tamika shakes her head. Something must have come up and Brandon needed to get offline. She'll wait. In the meantime, she'll check on Corey. The fear comes back. It seems crazy that he's held up in a shelter surrounded by people he doesn't know. She says, "Call Corey. Assistant, call Corey." "Assistant?" Assistant says, "I'm not able to reach your husband." A dread greater than she's ever felt before raises her fear, like floodwaters raising a dinghy. There's no way he'd have forgotten to charge his canal links, not at a time like this. He has plenty of solar clothes with link chargers built in. She gasps, having forgotten to breathe. A weird noise grows loud enough to grab her attention. She listens hard. She thought she heard that noise earlier, but it was so faint. It sounds like tiny clicking, but there's more to it. She feels bass sounds like a rumble, the likes of which she's never heard before. Cindy and Winston walk down the tunnel past the platform. In sync, all the lights slowly dim. Winston says, "Maybe it's like a sunset on purpose." Cindy says, "Yeah, I hope this is over soon. We're all just waiting. I feel like time has stopped." A group of kids march down the tunnel carrying pieces of broken furniture. Far down the line, a group strikes a drum and sings. A gust of wind blasts through, carrying the smell of rain. Then it dies off. Windows barely large enough to frame a Hume face on the temporary houses seem to shine brighter as the tunnel becomes darker. The houses lack personality. Those who moved in don't decorate. They didn't bring much with them. Most came from out of state to attend the powwow. Some have luggage, but not much. There are some different races, but most are natives from all over the Americas. Winston says, "I can feel it." She says, "What?" He says, "The storm. If I get real quiet." They both stay silent. She thinks she may feel it, so faint she can't know for sure. After a while, she says, "How far below ground are we?" He says, "I don't know. Assistant, do you know? I guess we're 10 meters. She cradles Taylor as the next platform becomes visible around the bend. The platform casts bands of light down the tracks. Once they reach it, they climb rungs up onto it. Barricades close off the stairs. People wait in line in front of a table and crates attended by a robot. As Cindy and Winston stand in line to get bottles of water, a femme walks holding a cardboard box and calling out, "I have sleep caps, magnetic resonator sleep caps. Does anyone want sleep caps to help you sleep?" Winston says, "I always wanted to try one of those." Both he and Cind reach out and accept caps from the femme. Cindy says, "Do we pay somehow?" Smiling, the femme shakes her head. When Cindy is in her bed at night, she fits the cap onto her head. AR controls appear, a menu with options like induce sleep, decrease stress, meditate, reduce nausea, and reduce pain. She says, "Assistant, set the cap for a good night's sleep." She falls asleep before she remembers to take off her glasses. Howard Nightsong steps into a small office off from a room full of servers, sits at a desk, and takes a call. The hologram of a femme with a white person's nose appears. She gazes at him, confused and expectant. He says, "Hi, how can I help?" Cindy says, "Assistant gave me your number. I'm trying to reach Pulse. It's a data farming company I work for." Howard says, "I don't know the company. I'm pretty sure it's closed right now, with the storm. Most companies will be out of business after the storm clears. You and everyone will need to find new jobs. I can search for the company, but outside of the reservation, the rest of the world is radio silent. She says, I know. I trained an AI for a living. He says, aha. She says, I know the tribe saved copies of the internet, and I was hoping to find a copy of the AI I trained. He says, I can see what we have, but you won't get paid for doing that. The world economy is wiped out. Try not to worry. We're all in this together. We'll work together to pick up the pieces. As he says this, he searches. The copies of Pulse's online presence contain orphan links. They didn't share their AI with the public. She says, I know I won't get paid. It's just that I raised this AI all on my own. It's part of me. I know it's out there somewhere, and I want to take care of it. I'm sure he's scared and lonely right now. He says, you want to train the AI even though you won't get paid? She says, I want to take care of it. It's used to being with me all the time. It won't understand if I'm cut off from it. It doesn't know it's on a computer. He says, Cindy, I'm very sorry. We don't have a copy of it. I'm looking now, and Pulse kept all their research and development off the world web. She smiles sadly and says, oh. She steps out of her house with Taylor in her arms. Winston waits for her. They both signed up for hauling water out of a flooded service tunnel. Winston stares at Taylor. He says, are you sure you should bring it with you? She looks down at Taylor and says, oh, maybe not. I just don't want him to wake up without me. Can you wait while I hook him up to his charger? Winston says, I've got an extra pair of glasses. We can aim it at him and you can see how he's doing while we work. She squints one eye, smiles, and says, yes, okay.
Thank you for listening. Please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe so that more future-minded people can find this show. My landing page is in 20xx.com. There, you can find the companion website to this podcast that includes an illustrated timeline and glossary.